Welcome to the Heart Rate Variability Podcast. Each week we talk about heart rate variability and how it can be used to improve your overall health and wellness. Please consider the information in this podcast for your informational use and not medical advice. Please see your medical provider to apply any of the strategies outlined in this episode. Heart Rate Variability Podcast is a production of Optimal LLC and Optimal HRV. Check us out at optimalhrv.com. Please enjoy the show. Welcome, friends, to the Heart Rate Variability Podcast. I am back here today with Dr. David Hopper. Dr. Dave, how are you doing today, my friend?
Oh, I am doing excellent. I'm very excited to be chatting with you again. Very excited. Got a lot of energy from AAPB coming off that conference. And we're rocking and rolling.
Well, we co-presented at that conference on a topic that I know we talked about years ago, but I've seen you present several times on this now and have kind of watched your evolution in this area to what I would consider an expert. We continue to have fun conversations about this topic as we both nerd out about it. So I'm excited to bring up nutrition again and talk about this topic with you. And so, you know, I think a couple, maybe even three, we've been around for a while now. So it's been a few years since we posted this episode. I would like, because I don't know the answer to this question, what has been your journey with this in the last couple of years from somebody who knew very knowledgeable on this to now doing presentations at very intense, very high level conferences on this topic?
Yeah, you know, it's funny because we get a pretty good training on nutrition, biochemistry, all that kind of stuff through our chiropractic program in itself. So it's funny when you come out of something like that, as you know, being somebody who's been through grad school several times, when you're on the other side, you go, well, I don't really know much more than I knew before I started, because you're with your peers. Right. And you feel like, hey, I know just as much as the guy next to me, but the guy next to you went through the same program.
And then like 30 years eclipses and you're like, yeah, I guess I still have these initials behind my name, but it was a long time ago.
Yeah. So it's weird to, you know, to consider yourself a professional in, you know, or an expert in something like that. But it's also a big passion of mine. It's a lot of my lifestyle and how, you know, me and my family live. So it's something that, you know, I literally think about every moment of every day, right? Because it's everything that I put in my mouth. So how that has evolved is I've just gotten deeper into every little bit, right? So, you know, you start thinking about, oh, you know, we want to eat fruits and vegetables, and then it's okay, but what types of fruits and vegetables, right? And you know, you can eat these organic fruits and vegetables, or you can eat these non-organic fruits and vegetables, and you say, yeah, you know, what's the difference really? One costs a whole lot more, you know, but then when you really start to look behind, you go, oh, wow, wait, here's the difference, right? And I think that's a huge piece that we hit on at the AAPB seminar, was the importance of making those little decisions like that, like why you would choose organic over not organic, and what that means. We talked a lot about glyphosate at the conference as well. That was a big piece of it. So what is actually being sprayed on your foods and what that means for your health long-term, what that means for your children's health and development. So, you know, I'd say those are like the little detail pieces. The whys behind what we pick and choose has gotten deeper and deeper and deeper as the years go by.
Well, let's explore and just to acknowledge conversations we've had about affordability and healthy eating. And those two things don't always go together. They don't always go together with this next question of, I'd love for you to share your sort of research, your thinking around organic versus non-organic. You already gave a good introduction to it, but it's gotten me telling my wife, you know, you got to buy organic. And my wife's telling me, but you're cheap as hell, Matt. And I'm like, but you got to buy organic. Like, so you've convinced me. I'd love for you to share with our audience, though, sort of some of the conclusions that you've come through your research.
Yeah, well, absolutely. So, I mean, and this is nothing new. I mean, this is not new research by any means. But what we know is that glyphosate is, it literally destroys your nervous system, and is detrimental to your health in every way as a result of that. But the biggest thing, the craziest thing, is you know, in that research paper that I presented, which was a systemic review from 2022, was showing that you know, the amounts vary person to person, what level it's going to hit, but whatever that level is, current regulations allow for far beyond that level. And not only, you know, is that what's happening to us, right? And that regulations are allowing this to be in place. But it's also the damage that it's doing to the environment as a result of the overuse of this sterilization chemical as well. So it's, you know, it's not just detrimental for us individuals, but for our entire planet and the future of our planet as well, which is something that we all have to be, you know, considerate of. And I know, you know, in the way that you look at nutrition, especially Matt, it's all about that. With, you know, so it's really hitting all sides of the coin, right? And then when we look at the United States versus other countries as well, the United States standards are far lower or higher, however you want to look at it, in regards to, we allow a lot more chemical use than what is allowed in other countries. So that's very unfortunate for those of us who live here and choose to not eat organic. And like I was saying at AAPB, and like I like to tell everybody too, is it's a vote that you're making when you go to the grocery store and you buy organic or you buy not organic. If you buy organic, you're making a vote that this is the way that I want to see things made, right? Because if there's the demand there that everybody's buying organic foods, more organic foods will be produced, yeah. Less glyphosate, less, you know, herbicides, pesticides, all those things are going to be used, less will be used as a result because the demand isn't there for the inorganic foods. So it is a vote, you know, I feel like it is a responsibility of ours to make that vote. And as far as affordability, you know, because you hit that, like, yeah, it's a lot more expensive to buy organic foods. It's a lot more expensive to buy high quality foods. And that's unfortunate. But two things with that. One, as the demand for them becomes higher, right, and more become, and that becomes, you know, the thing that is produced more, prices will fall, you know, as we have more production of those. Or at least I like to imagine that that would happen. But the other thing with that is it's all about priorities. You know, when it comes down to it, if we go, you know, and we look at what you're spending your money on each week, there's a really good chance that, you know, you could probably cut spending on something else that probably is, you know, maybe even detrimental to your health. And maybe you could put that money into, you know, into the grocery list category instead. And that could be as simple as, you know, most people listening to this podcast probably consume alcohol to some degree. And alcohol is quite expensive. And it's also quite detrimental to your health. So if you could take some funding from that alcohol money and move it over to the organic foods money, right? I don't know if broccoli and whiskey are, you know, comparable as far as fun level goes, but if you can look at it that way, what's your priority, right? Yeah. And if your priority is to be as healthy as possible for as long as possible, then it's an easy decision to make.
Yeah. And I've been, you know, experimenting a little bit since I've made this conclusion. And again, I like to say frugal. My wife uses the word cheap, which I don't think is a strength-based way to put it. But, you know, one of the things that if you're looking out there and you go to the regular grocery store, boy, organic is like, okay, I can get, you know, 3 carrots for the price of 20, non-organic for twice the price. I mean, it's like, it's stupid in some ways how different I have found, and this is not an advertisement for them, is Costco provides a lot of organic foods for very affordable prices. Now, if your Costco's like mine, you have to kind of realize that your whole day's shot to go there. But at the same time, I have been working for you frugal people like myself out there, and I'm finding Costco is a solution that helps it get into that affordable range for folks. So I know it still can be pretty expensive, but I just want to throw that out there as my personal research with that. Farmers markets also, but you know, is that organic food at the farmers market? It's always a question as well. So
yes. So you bring up a great point though. You know, and by no means are we sponsored by Costco, but I would, yeah.
We're not
against it, but Costco does have a lot of high quality foods for very good prices.
Yeah.
I do have to say that, you know, even like, their oils, you know, their different types of flours and everything that they have, you know, make it a lot more affordable to eat in a more healthy way. Yeah. And with that too, Matt, you know, growing your own, is always an option. And granted, you know, if you're in a small apartment, that's a lot more difficult, but chances are you do have a window, right, where you can do some very minor, you know, growing out there. But there's also community gardens are becoming more and more of a thing. So growing your own is always a great way to go too. Even if you have a small yard, you know, the vertical farming, if anybody is familiar with that, if not, you can look into it, right? These are great ways to utilize small amounts of land to grow a large amount of vegetables, you know, and fruits for that matter. So it's very possible to do a decent amount of your own growing like that. Also, CSAs are wonderful too. So community shared agriculture programs, a lot of farmers do offer those, and that's another way to get very affordable cost for fully organic vegetables.
So the other thing, and you talked about you know, these pesticides destroying your nervous system. The other thing I know, and to bring heart rate variability in as well, is our shared, I think, nerd outness about inflammatory and anti-inflammatory foods. And since this kind of, you know, relates to that, what we're trying to do to increase heart rate variability, love for you to kind of dive into your thinking around these as well. Obviously, if we're eating anti-inflammatory but non-organic food, I'd love to hear kind of your thinking around that as well.
Yeah, so the whole basis of anti-inflammatory is that we're looking at foods, you know, not from a, is this healthy for me, is this not healthy for me, but rather, is this a food that is going to cause a large amount of inflammation within my body, or is it not, right? So there are particular foods that are more prone to causing inflammation, regardless of who you are, you know, and that's, you know, like, you don't have to have celiac disease to get inflammatory results from eating grains, right? Or gluten, right? You know, all of us will have some kind of a reaction. It's what is the severity level, right? So that's thing one is what are we looking at with inflammatory versus anti-inflammatory foods? And we always want to look at foods that, of course, are in that anti-inflammatory side. And then what does HRV say about that, right? Which is our most important thing, especially on this podcast.
Yeah.
And that's simple. It's very straightforward, right? If we are eating more anti-inflammatory foods, we have a higher heart rate variability, which means that we are healthier. versus when we eat inflammatory foods, not only do we feel horrible, right? In that we feel congested, we feel bloated, you know, we feel upset in our GI system, we get reflux, these kinds of things, we have a cloudy brain. So we feel all of these things, but also our HRV is quite depressed when we practice one way versus the other. And that's where, you know, I know Matt, I started challenging people, at the conference to the proof is in the pudding, right? Just do it, because most of us don't even realize that how inflamed we actually are from the diets that we're currently eating. And if you just try it, not only will you feel so much better, but your HRV should actually reflect that change in how you feel. I mean, that your HRV should actually increase. So, yes.
And what are some of the foods? I know we each have our list, but what are some of the key foods to avoid from the inflammatory perspective, and vice versa? What foods would you encourage people to kind of replace or focus on as anti-inflammatory?
Yeah. So some of the first would be simple things like sugar, right? You know, sugar, unfortunately, is going to be one of those things that there's just no way to say that that's a positive for you.
Yeah. real sugar is that it's still like real bad. Yeah.
Right. It's like, yeah, unfortunately, it's one of those things, and especially in large amounts, which is how most people consume sugar. Dairy is another one. I get a lot of pushback on this because a lot of people don't want to give up dairy. But it's just what it is. Dairy is irritating to all of our mucous membranes. And as a result of that, it causes inflammation, it causes gas, it causes bloating, it causes sinus congestion, it causes brain fog, all of these things as a result of it. And again, it's okay if you don't believe me, but try going 30 days without dairy.
Yeah.
And then add dairy back in, and then tell me you don't believe me.
Yeah.
Because there's almost nobody out there who won't notice a difference,
right,
making that switch. So those are big ones. And then soy is another one that I do put on the list. And as you and I had talked about, you know, soy is a phytoestrogen, so your body's going to confuse that with estrogen. So whether you're male or female, you know, that's not going to be a positive. And then when we also add in the fact that that soy, along with our, it's escaping me. Not garbanzo beans. What are they, Matt? That makes hummus or
chickpeas.
Chickpeas. There you go.
Yeah.
Along with our chickpeas, like those are some of the most assaulted foods in terms of their the amount of pesticides and chemicals that they actually receive. So because of that, both of those actually end up being on that, you know, quote unquote bad list. And then, of course, things like alcohol, right? There's just no room for alcohol. And I think you and I have both figured that out through our HRV journey, that unfortunately alcohol just isn't good for you.
Not good. Right.
but just like pizza, right?
Right.
You can still do it every once in a while. It just shouldn't be an every day or even an every week kind of a thing.
Right.
And then we talked about organic versus inorganic. And the other thing would be our meats. So the meats and the quality of the meat that you get. And this is another big one that I harped on at the conference too, which was that buying grass-fed, grass-finished versus your traditionally raised beef, and the nutritional quality that you get difference-wise, one versus the other, right? One ends up being inflammatory, whereas the other is anti-inflammatory. Same with your fish. If you're buying farm-raised fish versus wild-caught fish, and the inflammatory load that comes along with farm-raised fish that you actually get an anti-inflammatory effect from your wild-caught fish. So again, another thing that just like organic, unfortunately, there's going to be quite a price difference that goes along with that, but there's also quite a nutritional and health benefit that goes along with buying that more expensive beef, buying that more expensive fish, and also the eggs too, right? Your eggs and your chickens go along with that category. So.
And I, I want to throw something by you. We haven't really talked about this, but like, what is creating inflammation? And what, reading on this, because I was throwing around inflammatory foods, getting all excited about it with that. But like, what creates this biological response to certain foods? And if I'd love to get your, but my understanding has become basically our body sees these foods as just bad. And so it triggers this, hey, I got to fight off this illness or this invader or this bad thing that's in our body, creating that inflammation. Is that sort of your understanding about like what is really happening if I go and I drink, 64 liters of soda and down some fast food, is that your kind of perception of it as well?
So yes, it is similar in regard to fighting off an infection, right? In that you do create the inflammation to get rid of the bad stuff. Your body is literally literally fending that off. So like if we use something like dairy, for example, right? When you consume dairy, it ends up being very irritating to the mucous membranes, and as a result, you end up producing additional mucus, which is going to make it hard to breathe. It's going to make it hard to, you're going to feel that sensation of it's hard to digest. It's hard to, hard to breathe through your nose, hard to breathe, down, right? There's definitely cases where people have given up dairy and their asthma went away, right? And then through the whole digestive tract, it's going to irritate everything throughout there too, right? To the point where you end up with potentially some kind of chronic inflammatory bowel disease, right? And which is another thing, like I was saying at the conference, right, where it's and we had people in the crowd echoing that as well, that people who have a Crohn's or some kind of inflammatory bowel disease and even have surgeries for that, they don't get put on any special diet because a lot of GI specialists will tell their patients diet has nothing to do with what is going on, which is mind-boggling. And then when it comes to like the sugar aspect, right? So with sugar, for example, when you consume a large amount of sugar, like you said, you drink your 2 liter of Pepsi, or something of that nature. Sugar is literally a neurotoxin when it's left out in the bloodstream. So it will actually start to deteriorate at your nervous system, right? So this is where these things become very dangerous to have large amounts floating around in the body. So that's where we don't want to consume a lot of sugars like what we would find in simple sugars like what we would find in a soda or a candy, for example. But we also don't want to consume large amounts of grains and breads when we're not using that energy. And that's a
We're not
big
carving up anymore, unfortunately.
right.
No more
That
spaghetti before the half marathon.
well that that yeah and I mean and that's
But what
definitely
we were
the
doing tomorrow, like just think about what we were doing, right? We were creating a whole bunch of inflammation. I mean, we got the energy, but yeah, it's funny what we thought was good for us back in the day.
Right. And I mean, and there's definitely still people who do the carving up, the night before a run, and whatnot. But yeah, exactly. It's amazing what we do learn and what we realize, like, oh man, we were really messing up there. But yeah, with that, like, that's another big topic too, is eating for what you're going to do too. So So, like, for example, I knew I was going to have two really hard workouts today. So I ate a, well, I did one workout before breakfast, but then I actually ate a really, a really great breakfast. I had a really good snack. Then I had another really hard workout, and then I had, and then I had a good meal following that workout. Right now we're at somewhere between whatever we were at a post lunch meal and dinner, but that's because I knew I was going to be very active today. On a day where I'm not going to be, and I didn't have very hard workouts the day before, my body doesn't need the energy. I simply don't need the excess energy. So I'm not going to fuel my body up to just have excess energy sitting around, because what happens to that is it turns to fat, right? It turns to inflammation. So we have to look at things from that perspective too, of what do I have in store for today? Because if today, if I didn't do much yesterday, and today doesn't have much, especially for activity on the books, then yeah, I'm probably gonna fast all morning, right? I'm probably gonna fast until lunch. Then I'll break my fast, and I'll have a lunch that is mostly meat and vegetables, and then I will, and then I'll have a dinner that is mostly the same, meat and vegetables. And that's gonna be my meals for the day, because I don't need the energy. I'm not burning it. So if I consume it, nothing good is going to come of that.
So you mentioned fasting. So let's before we go into the anti-inflammatory kind of list and some of the highlights there. I know I don't love the term intermittent fasting, but eating within a window, I kind of like that terminology, an 8 hour, 10 hour window. If you have any pre-existing conditions, basically make sure you talk to your medical provider around this stuff, please. But how do you sort of look at that? I know when we were writing the book, we found some research around that it could improve heart rate variability. Kind of what are your thoughts on that pretty popular, trendy topic?
Yes, indeed, it is at the moment.
They will sell you things now, Dave, to fast, which I like. Well, you gotta love capitalism, right? Not eating. We can monetize that. Of course we can.
Yes.
No,
Yes. You're not eating anything. Here's something that you
here.
need to
Give
do.
us $100 a month and we'll tell you not to eat. There you go. So
Yes. So indeed, right, we know that fasting does increase heart rate variability. But we also know that there's a point where fasting will become detrimental. There's that fine window, right? And without a doubt, you can do a 48-hour fast, and that's perfectly fine. I wouldn't do that every week. I wouldn't even probably do that every month. But you can do that, and it's perfectly fine. But the intermittent fasting, when we come down to that, or looking at things through a feeding window, that ends up being great, because you're not, for a lot of people, it's simply just the fact that you're leaving out one or two meals and all the snacks that you would have otherwise. You're just cutting all of that out. So even if you didn't change your diet and all you did was focus on an 8-hour feeding window each day, you would get really good results, just because you're not snacking every 10 minutes. You're not snacking on, and usually ends up being junk, even if it's healthy, right? You're snacking on things that you don't need to be consuming. And if you're able to, right, you're eliminating at least one, if not two, entire meals from your day. So just the calorie deficit in itself is going to be wonderful. And then that helps with natural cellular die-off too, of our weaker cells too. So that's actually shown great as far as helping with things like cancer and various diseases that we can influence positive results just from essentially starving out the bad cells, which is cool. But with With the fasting though, if we add in, not only are we fasting, and I do a coffee fast. I won't not drink coffee.
It doesn't have any calories if you don't make it unhealthy. So black coffee, superfood, who would have thought?
Oh, right. Yes. As long as you got good quality coffee, it is excellent for you.
Yes.
So yeah, I do that. And even on days where I do a weightlifting workout in the morning, I still will fast, thereafter. I'll do amino acids after my workout. And then I won't eat until after lunch. And that's how I do it. And I know that's how a lot of people do it. But that tends to be great results as far as health goes, as far as HRV goes, and the way that you feel, too. I know, on a day that I fast, and this is echoed by, hundreds of people, anywhere you can listen to a podcast, people talking about it, is the clarity that you have, the way that your body feels when you are in that fasted state is just unbelievable. In fact, the worst part of my day those days is when I eat, when I eat at 11:30 or noon, because you can feel your brain function just literally decrease. Right. Yeah. And it's funny. And I think you've had the same results too, Matt. Is that right?
Yeah, I mean, I've been doing, it's just how I eat now. So one of it was like, with the information about that you should consume your last calorie about 2 to 3 hours before bed, depending on
Yes.
how aggressive you want to be. Usually it's three from what I see, but sometimes you'll see two out there. So basically, when I just stop eating after dinner, and then have a little bit delayed for breakfast, but pretty much eating the same that I was, which was healthy, for the good part, my diet, so, but yeah, I find it helps me sleep. I do some extended fast. I always like to go on a long hike, like before, like, and really get the, I believe, and correct me if I'm wrong here, but I'm getting the energy from fat with ketosis there, which just,
Correct.
I love being out in nature, having that feeling. My wife, if she tries it, her blood sugar crashes, and they're, it's not great for anybody if that happens. So, but for me, it's just like I can be, I just love that feeling of being active, being in nature, and I have all the energy I need to go hike, 15 miles in that state. Just feels great.
Yes, and there's a huge difference in when you are burning calories from primarily from fat, and you're in a ketosis state versus when you are burning calories from carbohydrates, from your stored glycogen, all that. It's a big difference in how you feel and how you perform. I know I feel like my workouts are way better when I'm in a fasted state. Actually, they're some of the best workouts I'll ever get. I don't know about combative workouts like doing jujitsu in a fasted state. I actually have not done that. But I don't know how that would go. But lifting weights though, I definitely lift just as strong, actually stronger, in a fasted state versus not fasted. And yeah, the mental clarity, the way that you feel, it's just unbelievable. And then yes, the big thing, and yeah, we should say that too, right? Because that's probably the big thing that most people are interested in, is that you're burning fat as your primary fuel source, right? In this state. So that's where a lot of people are interested in being.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think the important message is, in its nature, it is not, has to be for weight loss. That can be a side effect for some people, but it's just, it's a healthier, it's sort of how I think we're designed as humans to consume nutrients is within that period. It seems to spark a lot of positive biology, anti-inflammatory, heart rate variability, all that stuff seems to trend for most people, and feeling again. And I always like to say that 8 to 10 hour window is pretty safe for most people without a pre-existing condition. Obviously, you know, I need you are a medical professional. I am not, and you are not their medical professional for the most part, but you know, it's something you can play around with without, you know, any danger for most people.
Yeah. Yes, absolutely. But yes, we should always say that, right? Make sure that you check with your doctor before
your
you
doctor.
Try it.
So with our time we got left, let's jump into anti-inflammatory foods. So what is going on? Are these like foods that just don't cause inflammation, or are they like really doing something good for us as far as HRV, overall health, nervous system health?
So, well, let's be, you know, right to that point, right? All foods cause inflammation. The moment you consume food, you are causing some level of inflammation, right? It's just how much inflammation is happening there. So an anti-inflammatory food is just causing less inflammation, and it comes with positive health benefits, right? So you know, if we look at something like, let's use grass-fed beef for an example. If you have grass-fed, grass-finished beef, when you consume that beef, you are getting very positive, large amounts of omega-3 fatty acids, which are very anti-inflammatory. And they also have a lot of positive health benefits within your body, within your brain. So this is something, you know, a lot of people take, you know, omega-3 fish oils, you know, and all that kind of stuff. So we're getting these positive fatty acids when we consume high quality meats like that, versus when we consume a meat that is of low quality, right? So something that is, you know, your grain fed cattle, for example, that's going to come with a lot of omega-6 fatty acids and not so much of the omega-3 fatty acids. And that is very inflammatory to your body. So that is setting off an inflammatory cascade within your body. So we are going to see a lot of negative health consequences as a result of that, right? So it's, you know, again, which direction are you pushing when you consume these things? Now, the same is true for, you know, as I mentioned before, the farm-raised fish versus the wild caught fish, right? The wild caught fish is going to be that positive omega-3 fatty acid, whereas the grain fed farm raised fish is going to be your omega-6 fatty acids. So we always want to push for the omega-3s. We always want to push for that more natural, right? Not only is it positive for our health, but it's also positive for the environment. So we always want to, you know, it's great that they happen to be one and the same, you know? So I love that. And, you know, and as a natural health practitioner, it couldn't be better that what's great for us also happens to be what's best for the animal and the environment. So it's wonderful there. Also, Matt, I think, you know, it might be interesting for our listeners to hear as well, what I mentioned at the conference too, which is that our cattle, so our cattle are fed so unnatural, their diets are so unnatural when they're grain fed, that they actually had a very difficult time keeping, having the cattle keep their food down so that they could gain weight. As of, you know, I forget when that was, but, you know, a handful of years ago or so, right? More than half of the reflux medication in this country goes into cattle feed so that cattle can keep the food down. Because again, it's so irritating to their systems that we need to give them this medication along with their food to make sure that they can keep their food down so that they, of course, can gain weight. And then, you know, when it comes to, you know, the cruelty of the animals too, right? They have such limited movement, such unnatural diets. So they are pumped full of, you know, hormones to make them grow faster. They're pumped full of antibiotics to make sure that they're not getting sick while they're eating these unnatural diets and not moving or exercising. You know, so it's a very sad life for these animals. And on the other side of it, we're consuming those things, right? We're consuming these antibiotics through consuming their meat. We're consuming these hormones through consuming their meat. We're consuming these irritating fatty acids through consuming the grain that these cattle ate. So, you know, it's a big cycle, right? You are what you ate is one of the best statements.
Mm-hmm. So what other things fall on your the anti-inflammatory list that people should think about?
You know, I think eggs is a big one that a lot of us you know, don't think a lot about or aren't aware of. And it's one of the more confusing ones too, because of all the labels that are on egg cartons nowadays. So, you know, if you go and look at an egg carton, there is, gosh, on one egg carton, you can get, it seems like 10 different labels about, you know, and they all sound positive, right? You know, vegetarian friend, cage free, you know, and it's like all these terms that are on there. And a lot of them are very misleading. And it's very unfortunate, but your eggs are the same as your meat and your fish, in that if you are consuming eggs that from chickens that were fed on natural diets, which would be vegetarian fed, you know, your grain fed chickens, you are going to be consuming more of the omega-6 fatty acid rather than the omega-3 fatty acid.
Yeah.
When you consume their eggs. So we want to be supporting that chicken that is a free range chicken, you know, pasture raised chicken. That's what you'd like to see on the box, pasture raised. Cause cage free simply means that they weren't kept in a little cage. They can, if you read the fine print on a lot of those boxes that say cage free, what it will say right next to it, is cage free, raised in an enclosed barn.
Right.
And no access to the outdoors.
Yeah.
And it's like, okay, so they weren't technically in a cage, but really right. They were just in a giant cage, right?
Yeah.
And if you ever see pictures of what that looks like for those chickens, it is just really sad living condition.
Yeah.
And same with those, right? You know, they're fed a lot of antibiotics as well. You know, and they are not treated the way that you'd want a happy chicken to be treated. So, your pasture raised, pasture access, you know, chickens are going to be your best bet, and organic, when we look at their, when we look at those boxes, those are going to be some things to look for. Unfortunately, that means that your eggs aren't going to cost $2.99 a carton, but they're
right.
probably going to be closer to like $7 a carton.
Yeah.
But you could have your own chicken.
Yeah.
Chickens. or, you know, again, farmers markets, the CSAs, those things, I'll help a lot with that. But yes, that would be another big one, is the chickens,
awesome.
Chicken eggs. Yeah.
And would you also like fruits, vegetables? What else would we kind of put on that list?
So yes, yeah, as we talked about your organic fruits and vegetables, vegetables, you know, go for it, for the most part, especially your greens.
Yeah.
But when it comes to, fruits, we always want to take those in moderation. Mm-hmm. And that's like nature's candy. You can look at it, that way. And it's a great way to look at it. Cause there's a lot of sugar that is going to come with fruit, natural sugar, right? It's a fructose mix. But the fact is it's a lot of sugar. So it's a treat, and that's what we want to look at those things as. That should not when we say fruits and vegetables, it's always one and the same.
Yeah.
Okay, we want a lot of both. No, it's more like fruits is just a little bit,
yeah,
right? Because they can become, you know, a negative to your health because of the amount of sugar. But definitely, a lot of the vegetables, especially your dark greens, especially your leafy greens, tend to carry a lot more nutrients.
Which is, you know, if I'm correct too, why we want to avoid fruit juices, you know, besides
Yes.
being sold that that glass of milk is a health food, we've also been sold that the glass of orange juice or apple juice is a health food. And I think if I understand correct, you take the fiber of the fruit out, and now all you're getting is the sugar without the fiber that sort of helps with the digestion process.
Correct, and that's why it tastes so good too, you know. So, yeah, unfortunately, right? But yeah, absolutely. The juices tend to be not so awesome, you know. So used in moderation, and when you do get a juice, you know, especially like if it's something that you're getting for your kids, that's going to be used in moderation. You know, you want to do the organic ones. You want to look at the label, and you want to make sure that the only thing in there is oranges, you know.
Exactly.
It there shouldn't be anything else. There's no need for anything else to be there. And another tip too, because my wife and I, we will, you know, we will get orange juice for our kids as a treat, and we always cut it. So we always do 50% water, 50% orange juice in there, and it's, you know, they think it's amazing. So it doesn't make a difference.
That's awesome. So other things I've seen on the list, extra virgin olive oil, which if you want to dive down that rabbit hole of olive oil, it is a weird, scary world, but hopefully you can get some. You know, I've seen that on the list, and a lot of fermented foods as well, though I know that can be a little tricky. You know, what kind of sauerkraut is it? You know, pickles, you know, kombucha, I'm a big fan of. Unfortunately, it's more expensive than most alcohol, so I kind of make up my cost of giving up alcohol with kombucha. But it is, again, because of the sugar, it's kind of a special drink. But I know the fermentation process helps with some of that as well.
Yes, kombucha actually contains true kombucha contains a small amount of alcohol, right?
Yeah, very, 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 like a fraction of a percent.
Right.
If
But
you get drunk off kombucha, you drinking way too much kombucha.
you're a true lightweight.
I think the water in it would probably kill you before the you get drunk, but don't
Yes.
attempt it.
Yes. But yeah, absolutely. Your fermented foods have a ton of positive health benefits, not so much for you actually, but for your gut microbiome, which in turn is a huge health benefit for you. So yeah, your fermented foods are a very big positive. And I'm sorry, what else did you say there?
So like sauerkrauts and other things as well. I mean, you see on the list sometimes too.
So any fermented food, I put it into very much on the positive side of things versus negative. And I know you know, just like you said with olive oil, right? There's rabbit holes that you can dive down into with all of these to really drive yourself crazy. which brings us to the next point as well, that you control what you can when you can, because you would go crazy if you tried to think about these things all the time. If you're going to go out to eat with your wife for dinner, just eat. You know, it's okay to not be perfect all the time. You know, you control what you can when you can, because I can guarantee you those foods are not being cooked with good oils. I can guarantee you those foods are not, you know, high quality meats. I can guarantee you all these, right? It's just how it is.
Well, I think that's a really good place to end, because even like I find it interesting with intermittent fasting, there's some research I wouldn't call it like meta study sort of level, but there is indications that like actually, you know, I hate to call them cheat days, but so to speak, are actually good for you, like in an interesting sort of way. So I'm not saying going out to eat and just going totally inflammatory and having six drinks is great for you, but give yourself that sort of give yourself leeway. You know, like I try to eat anti-inflammatory 5 days a week, and then have a couple of days that I don't. And that's been very, it's been much easier for me to adapt the 5 days of healthy when I know that there are Fridays coming and the cheat's coming too. So Dave, I know you got to run and teach a class, my friend. So it was great talking to you. We'll have to go in the gut biome here in the next episode. So.
Yeah, absolutely, Matt, and 100%. I totally support your use the cheat days. Have fun. Don't forget that that's what it's about, right? So
Awesome.
yeah, but
Well, thank you
thank
so
you.
much, Dave. And as always, people can find show notes at optimalhrv.com, and we'll see you next week.
All right, have an awesome rest of your day.